Chapter 68. AMS Predator. Grim watched as a Tasker banked toward them, steam engines chugging, turbines roaring, and lined up the shot that would scatter Predator and her crew to the winds. Like everything else the Tasker had done, the maneuver was performed flawlessly. Grim could just see, at this distance, the outlines of the officers standing on Itasca's bridge, including the high-crowned hat of her captain. The man's dark red uniform was marred by a blob of white, a sling for his arm, perhaps. Some of the blasts from Glorious's opening salvo must have gotten through Itasca's shroud, and heat or shrapnel from the impact upon the ship's armor must have wounded the man. Yet he stood where a captain ought, doing what a captain should. Grim could respect that. At least if he was to be gunned down, it would not be by some simpering, cowardly nepotist like Rook, or by the guns of some ragged, sloppy, desperately violent pirate. There was some comfort in the thought. Though it was a given, of course, that he and Predator would not simply lie down and die, either. He could not outrun Itasca, not now. Half of Predator's web had been shot away, severely limiting her speed, whereas the larger ship could simply deploy more ether silk from her expansive reels. Grim could order the men to raise sail, but the winds were not favorable in their current position, and turbine-driven Itasca would end the matter before the canvas sails could be deployed. He could not escape in the traditional fashion. They were too far from the mist to try anything but an almost certainly suicidal dive, given that one trim crystal had already folded on them. For that matter, even a sharp ascent could be equally dangerous. To stand and shoot it out with Itasca would be an utterly futile gesture. Oh, a lucky shot might strike a weakened point in Itasca's shroud. She had been in a heavy exchange at close quarters with Glorious, after all. But a single fortunate shot from Predator's guns would be unlikely to inflict heavy damage against the battlecruiser's armor, with anything but luck guided by the hands of the merciful builders, the archangels, and God in heaven himself. In contrast, it would take a similar stroke of fortune for Predator to survive obliteration from Itasca's broadside. Grim turned his head to regard the flag of Albion, snapping out straight in the cold wind from the main dorsal mast. He could strike his colours. The universal sign of surrender in aerial battle would almost certainly be honoured by a professional of the calibre of Itasca's captain. Of course, doing so would mean the loss of Predator, either taken as a prize or destroyed and sent to the surface as an act of war. And Grimm's soul screamed out against that course of action. But what other option did he have?
"Captain Grim?"
Miss Lancaster asked.
"What is that sound?"
Grim frowned at her for a second and then tilted one ear to the air, listening. His hearing still rang with the fury of recent battle, but yes, there was a sound coming from high above. A sound like distant trumpets. And it was coming from directly out of the blinding mid-morning sun. Grim whirled to stare at Itasca, thundering along under the rattle of her steam engines, the roar of her turbines, and realized that the enemy ship was effectively deafened by her own propulsion. Was there time? Yes, yes, there might be. Grim felt a smile stretch his lips from his teeth and bellowed.
"Hard to port at flank speed, Mr. Kettle. Stay ahead of her turn. Guns, ripple fire on Itasca's bridge."
"Sir?"
Creedy called back. Grim could hear the incredulity in the young officer's voice. Not only was he deliberately aiming for an enemy's bridge, an unworthy and generally unrewarding tactic, but ripple fire, loosing blasts from one cannon after another, would accomplish nothing against Itasca's heavy shroud at this distance. It would, in fact, do little more than provide a fireworks display.
"That is an order, Mr. Creedy," Grim thundered. "Fire!"
Creedy's voice bawled out the order, and within seconds Predator's cannon began hurling defiance into Itasca's teeth. Blasts of fire exploded against the shroud near Itasca's bow, blotting her bridge from view in intermittent washes of flame.
"Captain!"
came Journeyman's near-furious scream from the speaking tube.
"Portside trim crystal arrays about to fold on us! We've got to get somewhere quiet and stable and cut power!"
"Understood," Grimm called back. "Prepare to cut power to the port trim array."
"What?"
Journeyman blurted. Grimm turned to Miss Lancaster and began tightening her safety straps, checking each carefully.
"Excuse me, miss."
The young woman stared at him, her eyes widening.
"Captain?"
"Hold on to your straps tight with both hands, and do not adjust them, if you please," Grimm said.
Itasca continued her turn, bringing the annihilation of her broadside to bear, though Kettle kept wounded Predator racing ahead of it, banking into an arc that would circle around the other ship. The gesture was a futile one in the long term. Already Itasca was cutting her forward speed slightly, to send more power screaming through the lateral thrusters of her turbines, to spin her faster and catch Predator in the firing arc of her own portside guns. The foremost trio of guns in Itasca's array managed to traverse enough to catch Predator in their sights and spat angry spheres of flame. Her heavy cannon were considerably larger than those Predator boasted, and the enemy fire leapt across the sky to splash against Predator's shroud. It illuminated in a brilliant sphere of green light, and the roar of the cannon charges felt as if they shook Grimm's very bones. Grimm could all but feel his ship's determination to persevere, feel her stubborn endurance. But he could also feel some of the heat from the enemy rounds leak through the shroud, sending the heavy scent of ozone washing over the deck. Predator kept up her steady pounding of the area around Itasca's bridge, and Grimm knew that it would look like the tactic of a truly desperate man, hoping to end the threat to his ship by effectively cutting off the head of his foe. Stories and dramas often relied upon such a tactic, but in the messy practice of actual battle, targeting so precise was problematic, shrouds not so easily penetrated, and a determined enemy could usually batter through a foe's shroud amidships more accurately and rapidly than an enemy attempting to directly strike the enemy's bridge. But, Grimm thought, it was not his goal to wreak havoc on Itasca with his cannon. He had something far more dangerous in mind. After all, she was already deaf. Grimm wanted her blind, too. Itasca dropped even more of her speed to sharpen her turn, her armored flanks gleaming in the sun as she struggled to catch the smaller, nimbler ship in her gun's firing arcs, like a cat whirling on a darting mouse. Grimm could feel his heart beating in pure frantic terror as he felt the angles of the ships changing, felt more of the enemy's guns beginning to catch up to Predator, and knew he and his ship had only seconds to live. Itasca was determined to finish what she had begun those weeks ago, and was focused wholly upon Predator's destruction. And because she was, she never knew a thing until the sound of strident trumpets suddenly rose over even the thunder of her own engines and Predator's cannon fire. Commodore Alexander Bayard's AFS Valiant came crashing down from the sun, the heavy cruiser dropping in a descent that was very nearly as sharp as the combat dive of a far lighter vessel, her war cry a clarion call. On her flanks were her division mates, AFS Thunderous, roaring like a storm, and AFS Victorious, her spars shaking with the steady rumble of a vast war drum. A roar of unadulterated ferocity went up from the crew of Predator as the three Albion heavy cruisers pivoted with the coordination of a troop of dancers, bringing their broadsides to bear on Itasca, and unleashed the fury of 45 cannon in a nearly simultaneous flash of light and sound. The range was brutally close. Bayard had brought his ships down between Grimm's ship and Itasca. Albion cannon blasts smashed into Itasca's already tested shroud, hammered through it, and gouged into her hull itself. Itasca's heavy armor plating had been designed to withstand guns exactly like those now being used against her, in odds exactly like those she now faced. But even Itasca could not ignore Bayard's opening remarks. His ship's cannon tore into Itasca's armor, tearing gaping holes in her outer hull and setting everything in the compartments behind them on fire. In an instant, nearly half of Itasca's portside hull simply vanished, blown into clouds of ash and flame and cinder and shattered, glowing hot armor. And yet Itasca's crew was too disciplined to be rendered impotent, despite the speed of Bayard's nearly perfect execution of a classic attack. Even as the cruiser division opened fire, Itasca howled her defiance back at her foes, her cannon screaming, and the weight of her entire broadside came crashing down upon Thunderous. The battlecruiser's heavy cannon made light work of Thunderous's shroud, and the greater density of Itasca's fire meant that Thunderous never had a chance. Though her outer hull was armored with copper-clad steel, at that range and against those guns, she might as well have been protected by so much glass. Cannon charges erupted against the heavy cruiser's armored exterior, tore a hole in her large enough to sail through in a yacht, and erupted out the far side of Thunderous's hull in a spray of shattered armor, fire, and incinerated wood, gutting her in a single salvo. Grimm saw Thunderous's starboard trim crystal array fail in a shower of small explosions, and her aft lift crystal faltered, so that she slumped abruptly to stern and starboard, her deck tilting at a precarious angle, and she began dropping swiftly. The strain on her timbers was too much, and with a cracking sound as loud as a cannon, her back broke. The rear half of the airship simply plunged and became fouled in the long lengths of ether silk web, jerking the forward section of the doomed burning airship down, down, down. She vanished into the mists, but not before a quick-thinking aeronaut deployed an emergency buoy, basically nothing more than a tiny lift crystal attached to a colored pennant.
"Shift fire to her webs!" Grimm bellowed. "Let's give the Commodore the chance to wear her down."
"Fire on enemy web, aye,"
Creedy responded, and Predator's cannon began raking Itasca's webs, preventing her from building any speed beyond that provided by her turbines. Itasca kept up her original turn, trying to shelter her ravaged flank from her enemies, but Valiant and Victorious split apart like a pair of wolves circling a lumber bulk. The two Albion ships had been unable to entirely halt their descent in such a short distance, and they slid under the Itasca's plane and to either side of her, each ship tilting on its axis to keep one broadside on the enemy. In response, Itasca rolled her undamaged starboard broadside down toward Victorious, exposing her belly to Valiant. Itasca's fresh broadside fired first, and this time all of her cannon were focused on Victorious. The gun crews of Spire Aurora's prize battle cruiser knew their trade well, but had a poor shooting angle, and their hits were more dispersed. Victorious's shroud flared brilliant emerald green, blunting much of the fire, but even so, what got through pounded her dorsal and starboard mastworks to splinters and tore ragged holes in her starboard gun deck, taking a horrible toll among her gunners and setting much of the starboard side of the ship ablaze. Victorious and Valiant fired again, but Victorious's broadside was at a feeble half of its strength. Between Itasca's shroud and her heavy armor, the battlecruiser shrugged off the hits, though she rang like some vast gong as Victorious's fury pounded her hull. Valiant, meanwhile, rolled almost to the horizontal as she slipped beneath Itasca, and then ripple-fired directly up into her belly. Itasca's shroud held for the first half-dozen impacts, but then Bayard's gunners began to gouge out great pieces of her armoured hull, wrecking her forward ventral mastworks and pushing more and more deeply up into the ship, like a fine slender knife being pressed into a man's belly beneath the ribs, questing for the heart. Itasca shuddered and simply took the pounding, keeping her starboard guns on Victorious until her cannon cycled and howled again. The second salvo was of no great accounting in terms of its accuracy, with Bayard pounding its gun crews with regular shocks of impact from below, but against wounded Victorious it was enough. Though the cruiser tried to turn her mangled flanks from Itasca's guns, the only thing she could do was rotate her wounded side down, exposing her only lightly armored deck to enemy fire. Her shroud failed in a catastrophic burst of sparks, and the heavy cannon of the Auroran vessel pounded her deck, tearing open huge sections and setting dozens of fires in the unarmored compartments of her interior. Victorious faltered and dropped like a man hit with a sledgehammer. A power surge must have hit her starboard trim crystal array, because she abruptly rolled, flipped, and began tumbling as she sank, whirling over and over her long axis, entangling herself hopelessly in her own web. Itasca shuddered and continued her turn, descending with too much grace for a vessel so large, steam engines chugging, turning her intact starboard broadside toward Valiant with a ponderous sense of finality, a behemoth ready to crush the last of its smaller opponents. The proper thing for Bayard to do would have been to increase his pace and stay ahead of Itasca's spin, just as Grimm had done only moments before. But instead, Bayard broke in the other direction, as if seeking to disengage. It was a seemingly foolish movement, one that might have been expected from a panicked merchant skipper or a green captain in his first action. It would only carry Valiant into Itasca's sights that much more quickly, and could not possibly open up enough range to make a significant difference in the accuracy of Itasca's gunners. Worse, the move exposed more of the ship's stern, where armor plating was thinner and the ship's superstructure more vulnerable. Grimm could all but see Itasca's sudden eagerness to bring her cannon to bear and destroy the last of her serious opponents. And in doing so, to expose the gaping hole in her belly armor to Predator.
"Kettle!"
Grimm shouted.
"Aye!"
the pilot called. He had seen the opening as well, and nimble Predator banked and dipped lower, sliding into the shadow of Itasca's hull, into the dead area where her guns could not reach, and where, if she rolled, Predator would be annihilated in a single glorious flash of luminous thunder.
"Creedy!"
Grimm called.
"Prepare salvo fire!"
"Salvo fire, aye!"
Creedy screamed.
"Mr. Journeyman!"
Grimm called into the speaking tube.
"Cut the port trim array!"
Grimm felt it when the power to the portside trim crystals went out. Predator's deck suddenly flipped entirely to the vertical, the motion a shock against his safety harness, a blow to his ribcage. Miss Lancaster let out a sharp cry of surprise, her voice tight with a terror that she quickly choked off. And Predator's starboard guns rolled up to Itasca's belly from a range of 50 yards.
"Fire!"
Grimm roared. Predator's starboard cannon howled as one. There was no shroud left to defeat the lighter charges Predator's guns could throw, and Valiant's heavier weapons had taken a disastrous toll on Itasca's armored hull and interior armor alike. In the open space of the sky, Predator's rounds may not have done much more than put red-hot dents in Itasca's outer hull. But within the contained spaces of her interior compartments, the salvo of the lighter guns exploded with savage fury. A jet of fire washing back out of the relatively small opening in her armor. Itasca staggered violently, and the salvo sent after Bayard's ship went sailing wildly in every direction. The roar of the Auroran's thrusters abruptly stopped, and for a few seconds the only sounds in the sky were the creak of timbers and the crackle of fire and the distant chugging of Valiant's engines. And then, with a sound like furious thunder, Itasca's boiler exploded. The shock wave of it smashed into Predator like some vast fleshy hand and knocked the air from Grimm's lungs. He tried to give an order to Kettle, but no sound came from his lips. Kettle was already descending, though, and continuing forward, sailing out from under Itasca. The enormous armored ship had been entirely deformed by the explosion, armored hull warped and dented outward by the force of the blast, torn open in dozens of places. Her mastworks were wreckage, around the clock, and multiple trim crystals had failed, so that she was listing to one side and adrift, rotating slowly. Helpless aeronauts dangled from safety lines. Her entire portside gun deck had been consumed in fire, and aeronauts were screaming as they struggled to escape the blaze, many dying as the safety harnesses meant to protect them now trapped them within the flames. Valiant's steam whistle wailed in triumph as she came about, taking a course that would bring her back to Itasca without crossing the firing arc of her remaining gun deck. And one of Bayard's chase cannons sent a single shot flashing across Itasca's bow.
"Hold fire!" Grimm called.
"Hold fire, aye!"
Creedy echoed from the guns. For a long moment, Itasca hung in the sky like a great stunned beast, too dazed to understand its surroundings. Grimm could hear orders being shouted frantically up and down the larger ship. And then her colours came fluttering off of their few remaining masts and went spinning away into the breeze. Predator drifted far enough forward on Itasca that Grimm could see her captain on his listing bridge, braced against the tilt of his ship, held in place by three neat, taut safety lines. He looked of an age with Grimm. A tall, lean man with weathered skin and a blaze of silver in his otherwise coal-black hair. The man stared back at Grimm, then nodded, unhooked his sheathed sword from his side, and held its handle out toward Predator. Grimm straightened as much as he could in the nearly vertical position from which he depended from his own safety lines. He doffed his cap and nodded in reply to the Auroran captain. Itasca had surrendered. The battle was over.